We love all the devices that keep us in touch with the world. 50 years ago, it was transistor radios. Now it's smartphones. Judging by a visual scan of society, we don't much mind putting wireless communication devices up against our heads and bodies. But the recent backlash against the installation of smart meters by Pacific Power in the region showed that there are people who are concerned about things that travel through the air invisibly, carrying information. So we sought out someone who has knowledge of both the waves and the human body, and we found Dr. Stephen Sung, a radiation oncologist with the Providence Cancer Institute, also works at several other hospitals in the Portland area, medical director of the Gamma Knife Center of Oregon, and in private practice at the Oregon Clinic. A lot of different titles for Dr. Stephen Sung. Thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Happy to be here today. Thank you for calling.
So you treat cancers with radiation. Is that the gist of what you generally do?
That is the gist of what I do.
What is the basic principle then? I mean, just kind of give us an overview of what goes on in that process.
Well, in radiation therapy, we actually use what's called ionizing radiation or high-frequency radiation. The common term for that is X-rays and gamma rays. And we're actually using the radiation to cause damage to the cancers so that the cancers effectively will die from too much damage.
And so how precise do you have to get with the radiation you use to make sure that you are hitting a tumor and not hitting healthy tissue?
Well, you obviously have to be very precise. I liken it to shooting a gun. You know, you don't want to just blindly shoot a bullet. But we use a lot of techniques to minimize normal tissue injury. Everything is dose dependent. Normal tissues can be exposed to radiation and repair itself. But to deliver extra high doses of tumor while sparing normal tissues, we use multiple beams, different angles. It's like, you know, attacking from multi fronts instead of a single line. And by doing that, we can target the tumor better and spare the normal structures.
All right, so certainly want to aim things well as you to come back to the gun analogy, but what kinds of doses of radiation are we talking about here?
Extremely high, or as a... to give you an analogy, if I gave, let's say, 2 gray to 5 gray, which is a unit, to the whole body in one time, a patient can gradually die over a period of weeks, or... primary tumors like head and neck cancers and lung cancers, we give 70 gray. So it's a much, much higher dose, but it's dependent on volume and dose. So to a smaller area of the body, they can take a lot of radiation. To a larger part of the body, you can't give the same amount of radiation to lower the total dose. So it's a function of dose and volume. So it's I'm not sure if you can quite grasp that, but to a small part of the body, we can give very high dose safely. To a large part, we have to give a lower dose.
Is it a function of intensity and duration? Is that how you figure out the amount you're...
It's actually a function of, the human body is very complex. We have many organs. So it depends on location, where the radiation hits, how much spare tissues and organs there are. You know, the organs are either parallel or serial. For example, you have two lungs. So if we injure one part of one lung, you have another lung to function. You have two kidneys. You injure one kidney, you have another kidney to function, but you have one esophagus. And so we can't, we have to be very careful not to damage the esophagus because the entire organ then fails. And so it's complicated. It's not a simple answer, but just know that targeted carefully, high dose radiation will kill a tumor while keeping the patient alive.
You mentioned at the outset that what you use in radiation oncology is ionizing radiation. There's also non-ionizing radiation. What are we talking about here? What are the differences?
Well, the ability for radiation to cause ionization is a function of the wavelength. And shorter wavelength on the electromagnetic spectrum, such as X-rays, gamma rays, and ultra-short wavelength UV rays, are called ionizing radiation. Everything else below that, from radio waves to, we're talking about Wi-Fi today, Wi-Fi waves to visible light, those are non-ionizing radiation. They don't have enough energy to cause electrons to shoot out of an atom.
So does that make them somewhat less dangerous? Is that a real general sort of rule?
Yes. Well, from a biological standpoint, if you don't have enough energy to cause chemical reaction in the body, yes, that would be much safer.
We're talking to Dr. Steven Sung, who is a radiation oncologist, about radiation and the human body. He is a radiation oncologist, as we mentioned, medical director of the Gamma Knife Center of Oregon and connected to several hospitals in the greater Portland area. You can join the conversation on the exchange as we talk about what gamma knives are and also things like the non-ionizing radiations of Wi-Fi and cell phones. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So are we generally talking about non-ionizing radiation then with RF, radio frequency energy?
That's correct. From, you know, waves that transmit television signals to radio signals to telephone signals, those are non-ionizing radiation. Now, when you say is non-ionizing radiation harmless, well, depends. Like microwaves you use in your household is a non-ionizing radiation, but it cooks food because it heats up atoms and causes heat generation. And so, you know, it's not totally harmless in high exposure, but in the general background exposure that we have, it's considered harmless.
So then as we move into areas like well, we start with cell phones because we've had those around a bit longer than Wi-Fi, it seems. But you know, there were all the concerns in the early days about, you know, don't keep it too close to your lower body if you're a man, and people saying, well, you're better off using the headphones or a Bluetooth headset rather than sticking the cell phone up against your head. I mean, even as I look at the CDC site, it seems like we're not really entirely, completely, 100% sure.
That's because there have been large studies conducted studying the effects of cell phones, and the study is inconclusive. The only study that suggested a correlation, the Swedish study, and it was the criticism of that study was it's a case control. They asked patients who had brain tumors and non-brain, you know, patients without cancers, and say, okay, how much cell phone did you use in the last 10 years? How many minutes a day? Which side of the head did you use? You know, it was just, people had to rely on recollections of what they use. It's not a very reliable study. So that particular study was criticized because of that. Now, there was a subsequent two large prospective studies, which means they examined whether or not patients used cell phones or not, how much they did, and they followed them over a period of years and said, okay, which group developed more cancers? So that's a more reliable study. And in two large cohort studies like that, looking at hundreds of thousands of patients, they found no correlation. So the World Health Organization concluded that it may, we don't know, it probably doesn't cause cancer. So, you know, in science, anybody who says for sure, 100%, this is a scientific proof and there's no questioning about it, they're not real scientists. The true science is, well, we think, but we're not sure, or we're not sure, it may. So there, it's very wishy-washy language, but suffice it to say the conclusion is based on these large studies, there's no conclusive proof, like, for example, smoking with lung cancer. There is no conclusive proof that cell phone causes cancer.
All right, so smoking and lung cancer, we can draw a straight line from and to, but cell phones and cancer, it doesn't appear that way, is what you're saying.
Right, it doesn't make biological sense. It doesn't make physical sense. It doesn't bear out in incidence of cancer. If people have been using cell phones now for 20-some years, and if that were the case, that cancer, you know, brain tumors increase, we would see a proportional rise in the incidence of brain tumors. And in multiple national studies, not only in the United States, but in Europe, they don't see that. So we're not seeing increased number of brain tumors. So it's hard to say, well, it definitely causes cancer.
So Dr. Sung, I mean, how similar are the kinds of waves that come out of cell phones versus a microwave oven or Bluetooth signal or Wi-Fi within the home? Are these all the same, or are there some subtle differences between them?
Well, there's a subtle difference in wavelengths, you know, and cell phones are... People, I don't know if you remember UHF.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, it's the same range. And so they're basically UHF wavelengths. And so, you know, Wi-Fi, cell phones, they work in that range. And so if you grew up on TVs with that kind of antenna, well, you were exposed to that when you were kids. And it's the same form of radiation. And so I don't necessarily, you know, I don't lose sleep over it. My kids, all three of them use cell phones. I don't worry about it. Because I personally don't believe it causes cancer. But the risk, if it did, you know, again, we don't know, we can't be 100% sure, but if it did cause cancer, the risk would be so low. You're more risk of dying in a car accident, but you get in a car without thinking about it. You know, so I would say use your cell phone, with much lower risk and much lower concern.
We're talking to Dr. Stephen Sung at the Gamma Knife Center of Oregon, a radiation oncologist, also working at the Providence Cancer Institute and the Oregon Clinic. And we're talking about the things that we have around us that provide some sort of radiation, radio frequency radiation particularly, cell phones and Wi-Fi and that sort of thing. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org if you'd like to send an email. So for the folks who are younger, as we talk about UHF TV, that's ultra-high frequency TV, basically channel 14 and up is the range we're talking about here for folks who aren't used to the old tuners with the funny little loop antenna for the UHF and all that stuff. So Wi-Fi signals, is there anything appreciably different about these other than wavelength, Dr. Sung?
No. Physically speaking, no. It all depends on wavelength and the energy that it carries. And so, you know, the radiation waves carry different data, different messages, and they do different things, but it's the same wave. So no, there's no physical difference between them.
So then you probably heard a bit about the concern about smart meters that has been expressed. Pacific Power has been installing smart meters around the region, and there have been pockets of resistance in places, particularly to the fact that anybody who is trying to opt out has to pay extra for it. That's a business consideration. But on the radiation end of things, where you have some expertise in radiation, what do you make of what you're hearing about smart meters?
Yeah, from a health standpoint, I'm not concerned about smart meters. From a political standpoint, I think they're invasion of privacy, but that's another matter for another discussion. You know, but no, it's whether or not you have a smart meter, you're exposed to Wi-Fi waves, radio waves anyway. It goes through your house. Every time you turn on the radio, it has to go through your house to reach your device. That also means it goes through your body. And so whether or not you have these smart meters, you're surrounded by these waves anyway. You can't get away from it. So you got power lines outside. You have some, you know, electromagnetic waves from that. I mean, you cannot escape exposure to these waves no matter what you do. So I wouldn't be concerned about smart meters based on health issues.
All right, but you said privacy things, but that's a discussion for another time. So what you're saying there is something I think that's a key point here, that it doesn't matter if you have the devices or not. The waves are all around you.
That's correct.
Well, okay, let's take
whether your cell phone is on or off, mm-hmm. You know, the phone signals are going through your house, going through your body, going through your car. And that's why when you turn it on, no matter where you are, it comes on, you know, because it has to be transmitted throughout the atmosphere. So you're constantly exposed to it, whether you know it or not, you know. And for example, this is what I tell my patients. Every time you fly round trip from here to the East Coast, to New York and back, the amount of cosmic radiation you get exposed is equivalent to a chest X-ray. People don't even think about it. You don't blink twice about it, but you fly anyway. You can't avoid it. It's just around you all the time.
And this is just radiation that's there all the time in the environment?
That comes from the cosmic, yeah, from space.
No, because you're higher up is the reason you're
right.
Exposed to those. Okay. A couple of questions here from listeners. Let's start with Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Stephen Sung.
Thanks very much, Jeffrey. Doctor, I am very concerned about the autonomous vehicles. You're going to be stuck in traffic next to one of these things with radiation going out because they need powerful radiation in order to detect obstacles, etc. Tell us about what is happening to us as we are stuck for a half an hour or an hour next to a self-driving car, and there's going to be more of them sitting out there sending their radiation all over you, right next to you.
All right, let's find out about that. Thank you, Grumpy John. So any greater concern with self-driving cars and perhaps the power of their receive and transmit signals?
Well, I'll state that I'm frankly not knowledgeable about what kind of devices they're using. If you're talking about GPS type, first of all, GPS, we use GPS all the time. You know, we're exposed to that, and we don't seem to be concerned about it. And I'm assuming these self-driving cars will use some form of GPS. And then we also have cars with, you know, lane deviation detectors. I don't think they I think they use infrared. I may not be, mistaken, but I don't think they use high energy wavelengths for that. But regardless, again, I can't imagine these self-driving cars using signals that are any stronger than our cell phones. I may be wrong. But again, it's not so much the emphasis is the type of radiation that's used. You know, is it ionizing or is it not? And to what extent time exposure, what's the intensity of it, what's the energy of it? These are all unknown factors. I can't answer that question in all honesty accurately because I don't know the technology behind these self-driving cars, but in principle, if they're using the same type of radio waves that cell phones use, I wouldn't be overly concerned about them either.
Okay, another call here from Eli in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the radiation of different types and its effect on the human body with Dr. Stephen Sung.
Yes, I'm wondering if you're aware of the fact that cell phones and laptops put out sort of a steady wave, and smart meters are silent for a while, and then their pulse comes out very strongly, like hundreds of times higher than a cell phone or a laptop, and therefore the effect on the body is qualitatively different because of the way it comes out in these extreme peaks that laptops and cell phones don't do.
All right, I have heard that before. Thank you for the question, Eli. Dr. Sung, are you aware of the operation of the smart meters and whether there is any greater frequency or intensity in what they put out versus, for example, the Wi-Fi signal just that most of us have in our houses now?
Well, that's it. I'm going to get into a little scientific language here. The ability of radio waves or energy, any type of energy waves, to elicit oxidation is a function of its electron voltage, the amount of energy it has, not a function of total number of intensity. In other words, if you have a low energy wavelength, it doesn't matter if you have exposed to 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a big pulse of it. It doesn't have enough energy to cause ionization. You have to have high intensity radiation, high energy radiation to cause that. So I'm not sure if I'm making sense. So it doesn't matter if you have one photon or million photons of non-ionizing radiation, it will not cause ionization. Whereas one photon of ionizing radiation will cause ionization, a million will cause million more ionization. Does that make sense?
I think so. So what you're saying is that if it's non-ionizing radiation, you can get pelted with it and it's just never going to ionize.
That's correct.
Okay, that makes a certain amount of sense. We're talking to Dr. Stephen Sung again here on the Jefferson Exchange about radiation in the human body. He knows just a bit about this because he is a radiation oncologist, so uses ionizing radiation to treat cancer patients at the Providence Cancer Institute, the Gamma Knife Center of Oregon, the Oregon Clinic. And he's also aware of what radiation does generally in other ways, non-ionizing radiation, like Wi-Fi, like cell phones. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. I'm curious, not only do you have to keep up with what the human body does and is capable of, but it seems like the technology in radiation probably changes very frequently as well, which must represent something of a challenge professionally.
Well, not a challenge, but it's excitement because every 5 to 10 years, technology, like, you know, your cell phones and your laptops become obsolete after a few years, and you get, you know, the latest and best. Same thing with radiation oncology equipment, and so we're able to target tumors more accurately and spare normal tissues even in greater extent than we did in the past. And so we have a new technology coming out in Oregon. We'll be the first on the West Coast, called MR-Linac, a little PR push here. But it's going to be installed next year where we'll be able to do a real-time MRI scanning during radiation so we can see the internal organs, how it moves during treatment. So if something critical moves in front of the target, we can stop the radiation. When it moves out of the way, we can pump in more radiation. So it's a really exciting technology. We'll be the first on the West Coast to get it at Providence Cancer Center. It opens up new promises of hopefully higher cure rates for very difficult cancer patients.
So it sounds like the refinement in the process is great. I'm just curious to know, over the course of your own career, and I'm not asking you exactly how many years you've been practicing, but just over the course of the time that you've been practicing, if you've seen vast changes in things that are available to use to help patients.
Yeah, when I was a medical student, we used to, on X-ray films with crayons, draw what we want the radiation beams to look like, and then we pour metal, you know, blocks and things like that. Nowadays, there are no crayons. We use a computer mouse, and so it's changed incredibly in my career. I've been in Oregon now 20 years, and how we do radiation today is nothing like what we did 20 years ago. And in another 20 years, you know, maybe artificial intelligence will take over my job. I don't know, but it is an exciting field, technologically speaking. And as long as we benefit our cancer patients, I'm all for it.
Well, you know, cancer patients certainly come to you with greater concerns than the radiation itself. But I imagine you do get asked fairly often by patients as well about things like Wi-Fi. Is your general take on Wi-Fi and cell phones that it's not much to worry about? We can't find any evidence that there is anything to worry about.
Well, again, to be intellectually honest, we're never 100% sure. Is it totally harmless? We don't know. You know, in 20 years, will we find that yes, it does cause increased risk of cancer? Maybe. For now, with the experience that we have over the last 20, 30 years, we're not seeing any evidence that there's increased risk of cancer. And unfortunately, you know, how you present data and how you receive data depends on your bias. If you already have a preconceived notion that this is harmful, nothing I say will convince you otherwise. But if you have an open mind and if you really believe science has something to say, then so far the data suggests there's no conclusive proof that it causes cancer. And so based on that, we have to live our life, you know, the way we have to live our life and not worry too much. And as I said, there's much greater risk of death from getting in a car, but we do it all the time.
We do indeed. All right. Dr. Stephen Sung, a radiation oncologist with the Oregon Clinic, Providence Cancer Institute, and the Gamma Knife Center of Oregon. Thank you so much for answering our questions about radiation and the body today.
Thank you very much.